Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
Reese's peanut butter cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
Welcome to the Peter King Podcast, Training Camp Road Edition. I've been on the road all week. Actually, been on the road bordering 2 weeks right now. Going to a bunch of camps, meeting a bunch of people, and seeing how the 2019 season is shaping up. This week, I was in Westfield, Indiana at the Colts training facility and caught up, have an extended conversation with Darius Leonard, the defending defensive rookie of the year in the NFL. Really, really interesting kid. I enjoyed that. You will too. And also, in Jacksonville, met up with Jalen Ramsey, the self-proclaimed, and he'll tell you, if you haven't heard it yet, that he's the best cornerback in football. You'll hear him say that right on this podcast. Also, we'll do my segment, 5 Minutes with a Writer. From Browns Camp, we'll talk to Mary Kay Cabot of the Cleveland Plain Dealer. So, before we get started, I think a lot of you probably understand who have followed me over the years and who know me and who've read me know that probably my closest friend in the sports writing business was Don Banks. I worked with him for 16 years at Sports Illustrated and SI.com. And Don never woke up after he went to bed Saturday night. He was in a hotel, a Courtyard Marriott of all places, in Canton, Ohio, and was in a hotel on Sunday morning and just never woke up. They don't know how he died, why he died. He was a healthy guy. He was a runner. So it's a bitter pill to swallow, especially for a guy in his mid-50s. Who just recently, after being laid off from Sports Illustrated 3 years ago, just recently found another gig and started it last Thursday. That gig, unfortunately, only lasted 3 days. He worked for the Las Vegas Review-Journal. You've probably seen, if you're on social media, an outpouring of emotion about Don Banks because he truly was just a very, very good human being. And I want to tell you just one story. I wrote about him in the top of my column this week at Football Morning in America, NBCSports.com, and also ProFootballTalk.com. But I want to tell you one story about Don. He was basically, he's one of these guys who was always thinking of other people really above himself. He did that very often. He loved birthdays. He absolutely loved birthdays. When I turned 50, Don not only arranged to get me a Red Sox jersey, because we're both Red Sox followers, he not only arranged to get me a Red Sox jersey of Mike Timlin, who at the time was number 50. That number now is Mookie Betts' number. But at the time, 10 years ago, Mike Timlin, a relief pitcher, wore number 50. So he not only got me a jersey with 50 commemorating my birthday, but he also went to Fenway Park and he told Mike Timlin what the story was. So Mike Timlin wrote an autograph on the back of the jersey on the number that said, from 150 to another, happy birthday, Mike Timlin. And so Don was so delighted with that. He was so excited about it. And truly, of all the gifts on my 50th birthday, That's really the one I remember the most. It's hilarious. You know, a couple of years ago, he got me a mint condition 1957, because that's the year of my birth. A mint condition 1957 Ted Williams baseball card. And you know, that's just the kind of guy he was. He was thoughtful. He always asked about your life. And that's one of the reasons why you're seeing this outpouring of emotion on the death of Don Banks. Professionally, he was the most down-the-middle guy I have ever met in this business. You know, he was open to hearing every side of a story, and then he'd make a decision. He did not have sacred cows. He'd punch Roger Goodell in the nose one week in a column, and then, you know, he would praise him for something when at the time when it wasn't really very popular to praise him in the media. So a good friend of mine, as I record this, we just got into a courtyard in Rossford, Ohio, on the way from Packers camp to Browns camp. It's overnight on Monday. So I'll wake up Tuesday morning, drive the rest of the drive to Cleveland, watch the Browns continue the training camp tour. But quite honestly, there will be a piece of me missing. And the piece of me missing is named Don Banks. And now my conversation with 2018 NFL Defensive Rookie of the Year, Darius Leonard, the linebacker of the Indianapolis Colts. Darius, we're here at training camp. Does anybody like training camp? I mean, really, when you think about it, it's got to be about 95 heat index today. And you come out here in the middle of an Indiana summer, it's like every day is the same. Do you remotely like training camp?
Physically, no. But for the team camaraderie, I definitely enjoy that. I'm from down south, so this heat ain't nothing compared to anything in South Carolina or in Florida where I train at.
I always wonder, we've on our training camp trip, we just did the South. We did the three Florida teams. We did the Saints. We did the Falcons. We did the Panthers. Every day, the heat index was over 90. So I said to Calais Campbell, this is just kind of miserable, isn't it? And he goes, it's football. You know, every summer it's been the same for me. He played in Arizona, obviously, and now in Jacksonville. What about you? Is it just an average day, a day like today?
Oh, yeah, especially coming from South Carolina and then playing at South Carolina State. So I'm always was practicing in the heat. So then working on the farm all day. So the heat is nothing. And then you come out here just to have fun playing the game of football. You don't even feel how hot it is.
I want to ask you a little bit about your background. It's a fairly amazing story. You have one brother who was killed, mm-hmm. as I understand it, outside a bar in South Carolina. You have two other brothers who are incarcerated. How did you not become a statistic?
I'm seeing both sides of the good lifestyle and the bad lifestyle. I saw how sad my mom was when both brothers were incarcerated. When my brother got killed, I saw how much pain
How
that
old
brought
were
to
you
her.
When your brother got killed?
I was 17. Yeah. He was 18.
And what happened?
I guess wrong place, wrong time, I guess. So, you know, it sucks, especially me and him growing up in the same room, been 1 year apart. You know, that was my best friend. So it definitely sucks. But seeing my mom go through all that, and then seeing how happy my mom was when my brother made it to the NFL, and I knew right then where I wanted to make sure that my mom had everything she deserved, and to make sure she was happy, and make sure that she didn't have to feel that pain anymore.
I want to ask you a little bit about South Carolina State, because I know Harry Carson pretty well. And, you know, until now, and I guess still, he's the legendary South Carolina State linebacker. Did you know Harry Carson when you were there? Have you gotten to know him since?
I knew of him. I mean, I knew how great of a linebacker he was at South Carolina State. I knew he was in the NFL Hall of Fame. We always talk about the history of South Carolina State, but we actually never met until after my senior season. And we kind of just started talking from there, and he invited me to a lot of his events. So we kind of keep that Bulldog pride going and just try to pass down some knowledge to me.
What's the nickname?
We're talking about the Bulldog pride.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, I mean, we're from South Carolina State and our mascot is Bulldog, so, you know, we keep that together.
Yeah. What did he, was he at all an advisor to you? Has he told you anything that you have kind of held close and you felt was important?
No, I mean, he's a competitor. He's about like me. He always tell me that he was the best 53, you know, he was the best linebacker. So we always talk trash to each other, just kind of saying who had the better numbers at South Carolina State or who's going to be the best 53. So we always keep the competition going.
But you were number 53, but it's not because of Harry Carson,
not
right?
Not at all.
why did you choose 53?
My brother, who made it to the NFL, his first NFL number was 53, and I looked up to him ever since I was a little boy, and I always wanted to be like him. And once I made it to the NFL, I knew that it was because of his hard work and teaching me how to that nothing would be handed to me. So I just wanted to show him that how much I appreciate him and wanted to play for number 53.
When you were preparing for the draft, did you have much of an idea who might pick you?
Not at all. I mean, I thought either Dallas, Tampa Bay, or Pittsburgh. And next thing you knew, when I got the call, looked at my phone and said Indianapolis. So my heart got happy, said, let's get it.
I found it very interesting in doing a little bit of research for this that you were a highly criticized draft choice. In Bleacher Report, they said you were one of the worst picks in the draft.
Yep.
And I've heard that you have hung on to that.
Yeah.
Okay, so what did you do with those words? What did you do with that story?
I screenshotted it, and I put it on my phone, so every day before practice. Or
is it on the screen of your phone?
It was at one point, and then I got tired of looking at it, so I changed it back to my wife. So every practice or every game I look at it, and it just gave me an extra motivation to go out and prove that I belong in the NFL and I can play.
It was funny talking to Chris Ballard about you, the general manager of the Colts. One of the things he told me was that, you know, at the Senior Bowl, he would watch you practice, and then the Colts did an interview with you, and they thought, man, this guy is like too good to be true. He's really, really good. What are we seeing that other people aren't seeing? Everybody's talking about him, maybe a fourth round pick or whatever. And he said, so we picked him in the second round, and he said right away, I got two texts from people around the league, and they're saying, wow, you picked that guy kind of high. And so he just said, I just kept thinking to myself, man, I don't think I'm wrong. And so did you sort of feel that when you were picked, and what did that feel like?
I was talking about how people were saying it was a bad pick.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes, without a doubt. So, I mean, once I got picked, I mean, that was, I mean, one of the best days of my life. So, I mean, I was happy. But you know that once you get posted, you're going to see everybody have a chance to comment. So I always look at comments. I mean, that's something that drives me because I want to see how many people are talking trash about me so I can prove them wrong. And
do you ever engage with people on social media?
Never. I just love to see the trash talk.
You do?
Yes. I mean, it was.
Why, you truly believe that it helps you?
Yes, without a doubt. Because, I mean, it pushes you. Because no matter how well I do on the field, there's somebody out there that still is not going to be satisfied with the work that's been done. So if he's not satisfied, he can say that I need to work on this, so I'm going to prove that I'm good in that category, and I'm just going to show that everything you said that I can't do, I'm going to prove that I can go out and do it.
Yeah. So when you originally got here last year, you were after the draft, you were hurt and couldn't practice in minicamp, right? So you didn't have a full practice until your first day out here in training camp. You know, here we are in Westfield, Indiana, north of Indianapolis. So what do you remember about that first practice, especially the play you made on Andrew Luck?
I came out nervous. I mean, it was the first time being back on the field, so I definitely was nervous.
What was your injury?
My quad. I had to pull my quad.
Okay.
So then going through individual, I just wanted to make sure every rep was perfect. Then finally we got the team period. I had a tight end going vertical, so it was my guy. Then they said, no, I intercepted Andrew, and then the whole defensive side finally said something to me, and I kind of had a lot of weight leave my shoulder.
When you're a rookie in the NFL, not necessarily being that there's hazing, but do you really have to come in and prove yourself before you get the player?
Because, I mean, there's a lot of people, like, I always look at it, there's a lot of first-rounders go to the big schools, and everybody say they're going to be this big-time name, and then you come in and be a bust. So then when I came in, ours was complete opposite. I was saying that they said I was the worst draft pick, so I definitely had to come in and prove that I could play. So, I mean, I came in, I kept my mouth shut, and I was just willing to work. And after I made that one play, that's when the defense, that's when the coaches was actually saying, good job, hey, keep it up. We see that you can play a little bit. So they kind of – for somebody who's coming from a small school and then having people saying that you're going to be a bad draft pick, and then you come out to practice and you do something like that, it kind of give you a lot of confidence because, like I said, I came in very nervous. I didn't know what to expect. I didn't know how to feel. So after that play, it kind of made me feel pretty good about myself.
When did you know that you were going to start the season?
The last week of training camp and going into the preseason games, and he had me as a starter there, and I graded out as an F my first game against the Seahawks, and then the second game I get out a B, and then the second game I was
You mean you really were bad against the Seahawks?
Yes, I was terrible. I mean, I had bad alignments, I had lows, I was misfitting. So then, you know, when you get an F in front of everybody, as a man, you know, you got a lot of pride. So I took it, I started looking at film more, kind of just stayed in my playbook and kind of proved that I can play instead of grading out as an F. So I definitely took it and just ran with it.
You're one of those rare players that you don't watch film all day and all night.
No.
Explain why, and first of all, tell me, do you watch a lot less than the guys on this team?
Yes.
And why is that?
Because me personally, that first game, I mean, against Cincy,
regular season, the first game.
The first regular season game. And I went in, I mean, I watched maybe 6 hours of film by myself just when I got home, and I drew everything up. I knew the tendencies, and then when I got in the game, I was playing slow because I was guessing where they're going to run here, where they're going to run there. I know out of formation. So then I was like, I only think I had like 8 tackles. And 8 tackles for me is not my goal. I want 12 tackles or more a game. So then the next week, I said, you know what? Let me just take the coaching. Let's put the film to the side and just read my keys. And after that, going on in Washington, I had 19 tackles. And that's when I said, okay, maybe – I don't need to watch film. Maybe I could just listen to the coach and just play my keys.
So now if a high school kid comes to you for advice, or maybe a college kid, your advice would be never watch an instant of film.
No. No, not at all. I mean, everybody's different.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, like Walker, he loves to watch film. He knows exactly what's coming. That makes him comfortable.
Right.
And it makes me comfortable to go out and just read my keys and go from there. So, I mean, it's just different people, but I'm going to give them the best advice for their ability. I'm not just going to say, hey, don't go watch film. I don't, so you don't have to. I'm going to make sure to let them know that you watch film until you're comfortable. Then if you watch too much, and if you're not comfortable, don't watch at all.
Are your coaches okay with you not watching much film?
I'm not sure. I mean, I don't really walk around and
say. You don't advertise it.
No, I definitely don't advertise that I don't watch film. But, I mean, Coach Flusman, we walk through every day, so – by the time game day, I done seen one play maybe 70 times. So once I get to the game, I'm very comfortable because I done seen it all week long.
I think it's interesting how Matt Eberflus, your defensive coordinator, does not care if you're 21 or 41. You know, he's going to play the guy who he thinks is the best guy. So you're going to have a lot of young guys. You got an infusion of talent this year on defense. Tell me what it's like playing for him, and – am I right? Does he just not really care how old you are?
He definitely doesn't care. I mean, it's always about competing. You compete every single day. So he doesn't care if you're a 13, 14-year vet or you're a rookie. If you go out there and prove that you can play better than the next guy, he's going to put you in there. And if you're a guy who's not going to risk your body for somebody else to make a play, he's definitely not going to put you in there because it's a team game and a scheme that we play. You got to be able to sacrifice your body for somebody else.
What surprised you about last year, if anything?
Everything.
Everything. Give me a little rundown.
I mean, as much success that I had, that was definitely a surprise, especially coming from a small school. I really thought I was going to have to take a backseat role. And then just all the publicity and everything that's coming now. So it's everything that happened was a surprise. Even being drafted was definitely a surprise because, I mean, as a kid, that's what you dream about. Then when your dream comes to reality, you know, you're in complete shock.
How about just the level of competition? Did you have last year sort of a welcome to the NFL moment that you where you said to yourself, I can really do this? When do you think that occurred to you, that I can do this at a high level?
After the Washington game, playing against, I mean, AP was one of the best backs to ever play. So, I mean, playing against him and not allowing him to rush over 100 yards and just playing well in coverage and just doing all the right things. And after that game being named Player of the Week in the NFL, that's a big high award. So that's when I kind of figure out that as long as I can keep my head down and keep working, I could be pretty decent in this league.
At your position, to me, I mean, Luke Kuechly once said about your job, I just want to stay out of the traffic. You know, I want to have some lanes to be able to get guys. Take me into your head and tell me, how do you succeed in what looks like total chaos out there?
You just as a linebacker, my number one job is hit the football. No matter what it is, the ball could be 50 yards downfield is to hit the ball. So you got to get there by any means necessary. If you got to fight through three blocks or anything, I got to get you the ball, and I take pride in that. Every single play I want to make and every single sack I want. So my drive is much bigger than a lot of people because a lot of people say, okay, I'm going to just do my job. The ball is away. I stayed in my gap. No, I'm not going to sit around and watch anybody else make a play. I want to go over and make the play.
Have you, as the season went on last year, and it became apparent that you might be Defensive Rookie of the Year, you were very close, did that become important to you? Did you care? How did you feel about that particular award?
Well, that particular award, man, just going in, I just, you know, you want what's best for the team. Yeah. I just wanted to go out every single play, like I just said, just make every single play. And at the end of the season, I mean, the chips fall where they fall, and hopefully this year they'll be holding up the Lombardi Trophy. But the individual awards, man, you really don't focus on that as much. That's some things that you want, but your first goal is a Super Bowl champion. And after the season was over, that's when I said, okay, looking back at film, maybe I can be Defensive Rookie of the Year. And, of course, you want your name at the top, so I'm a competitor. So I knew that I wanted that award, and I was blessed to receive it.
Did you find yourself sort of studying Derwin James at all? Because
not at
he
all.
Was your big competition for that.
Man, see, when you're playing it, it's just like a race. Usain Bolt said all the time, you focus on yourself. As soon as you start learning, looking sideways, that's when you get distracted. You keep your head down and control what you can control. That is outworking everybody and making every single play. And if the chips fall in your favor, they fall in your favor. If not, they don't.
What do you think other teams, other scouts, other people were wrong about you? What did they miss about you?
They just missed that. I mean, they would know the reason why I didn't go to a big school. That's the only thing, because if I would have went to Clemson or any other big school and got drafted, I would have been perfectly fine. I would have never been called the worst draft pick. But since I went to South Carolina State, nobody knew South Carolina State. The competition was maybe a little low, and I think that was the biggest downfall, because nobody knew it. And it's, you know, the NFL is a big about publicity. Okay, this guy's pretty high. Should have took this linebacker. He played at this bigger school. So I just had to come in and just prove everything.
Did you have any time this offseason to sort of appreciate what happened to you as a rookie, how unexpected it was? Were you able to sit down and sort of appreciate it, and what was that like, if so?
It was amazing just to sit back and just look at all the things that I accomplished. Just going back to the high school, just bringing back memories, seeing a lot of people wearing number 53, because just seeing kids that run up to me asking for my autograph, it was kind of surreal, because I'm coming from a small town, didn't have anything growing up, and then bringing home Defensive Rookie of the Year to a town that doesn't even have a stoplight, a town less than 1,000 people. I mean, it was pretty big, and they gave me the key to the city, and it kind of made me just think about how many people is behind me and how much more success can I have?
It's got to be a little bit bittersweet for you now because your one brother isn't there. You got two brothers who are in prison. And I wonder, what is your success meant for the family overall?
It's definitely at the top because, I mean, like you said, with two brothers incarcerated, one dead, and people saw my family as, okay, yeah, they're hit and miss. A lot of people just talk trash about my family. So then having my brother go to the NFL and my brother only playing 4 years. So a lot of people were saying, okay, yeah, they're not going to do anything. They just one-hit wonders maybe. So now having success is actually pretty good because now my mom is happy, the family happy, and we don't have to struggle anymore.
One other thing about your background that I'm curious about. Do you ever sit back and wonder why me and why not them and what happened to me different than happened, say, to your two brothers who were in prison and your other brother is dead?
No, I always would talk, never question God's word. Just control what you can control. I mean, I thank God every single day I wake up just for giving me this opportunity to play the game that I love, to be able to provide for my family, and that's it. I mean, I never ask why. I just control what I can control, and that's it.
Let's talk about this season a little bit. Are you one of those guys, I mean, tackles as a statistic, some people really believe in it. Some people think it's kind of an overrated stat. How do you feel about tackles, and what is your goal every year for tackles?
All right, tackles is definitely not overrated. How, you know, with tackles, if you don't tackle anybody, that means it's a touchdown, right?
Yeah.
So if you got to, I mean, you got to make stops. So I have big goals this year. I mean, I want 200 tackles, 10 sacks, 4 interceptions, 6 forced fumbles, Defensive Player of the Year, Super Bowl MVP. So
has anybody ever done that?
I don't know.
No, I don't think so. No,
I don't know.
No. I don't think so. Is it, I mean, that's your goal,
mm-hmm.
But do you think that 200 tackles is legitimately possible for you?
Anything is possible.
Yeah.
Anything is possible.
Yeah. What do you think of your team? And a year ago, everybody was thinking, well, this team, you know, is in a total rebuilding phase. And now you guys are getting a lot of love. You know, a lot of people picking you to win the division. Maybe you'll be the hunted instead of, you know, the hunters instead of the hunted. So I wonder, how do you look at your team? How good do you think you'll be? What do you see out here?
We got to prove it. We got to prove it each and every week. I really do think we have a pretty good team coming in. We have two great coordinators. We got a great head coach. So we all know each other's schemes. So last year, you know, it was the first year for everybody. Now that we're comfortable with each other, each coordinator. So Coach Frank always talking about every day getting 1% better, so that's what we come out and do, and hell, hopefully every week be 1-0.
How do you like playing for Frank Reich?
Oh, I love it. Love it. He's a great guy, great leader, and I definitely love being behind him.
So if you were to look at this season, at the end of this season, and say, you know, this is a successful season, what would be successful in your eyes?
Super Bowl champion.
That's it.
That's it.
Over the stats.
That's it. Super Bowl champion. I take that Super Bowl ring over everything.
I'll finish in asking you this. So now that you've done what you've done as a rookie, I wonder, do you expect teams maybe to play you differently, to block you differently? All of a sudden, you're not the lousy draft pick who was picked too high. Everybody now knows, okay, this guy can play. So what do you expect to see this year?
I expect to see something similar to what I've seen last couple games of last year. A lot of teams,
what was happening?
Just running the ball sideline away from me, just making me run sideline to sideline early. They try to get me tired. Then maybe late in the third or fourth quarter, they're going to run towards me to see if I'm tired or try to high-load me in the pass coverage. So there's just things you see on film that how teams going to try to attack you. So I definitely going to look at that and just keep working on that, and hopefully I can go from there.
You're a great example of the words and the media and people's opinions really not mattering. And you just took it into your own hands and you did it yourself, What's the moral of your story?
Moral of the story is just, I mean, we always, my high school coach always said, I remember my last high school game. He said, it's your book that you're writing. You got the pen. Don't let anybody else write anything in your book but yourself. So I'm not going to allow anybody to tell me what I can or cannot do. I'm going out and just prove that I can do anything that I put my mind to and just go from there.
Great moral of the story. Darius Leonard, hope you have a great 2019.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Wow. Yeah. I love you.
That's it.
Be sure to listen to Chris Sims' Unbuttoned podcast. He'll be on the road with us this week in Cleveland and Pittsburgh, and I will join him on his podcast very, very soon. We're going to record it, actually, in our UConn Denali, or whatever those things are called. I think it's a Denali, but we're going to record that driving from Pittsburgh to Cleveland, late on Tuesday. So you'll hear that this week. As a matter of fact, by the time you hear this, I already will have recorded it. So Chris Sims' podcast is so much fun because he is just a conversational guy. And he doesn't come in with a list of a bunch of questions. He has a conversation with people. So please listen and support the Unbuttoned podcast. And now my conversation with all-pro cornerback Jalen Ramsey of the Jaguars.
Jalen, you've had a very interesting NFL career so far. You've had a very, very interesting career. But I do need to ask you one question before we talk football. I was watching practice today, and the little pad that comes down from your back, there's a $20 bill in there, and at the bottom of the bill it says 20 land.
Mm.
Okay, so first I've never seen a $20 bill on a piece of equipment before, so you've got to tell me the story.
It's just swag. It's just my mindset, I guess. Every time I go out there, I'm trying to make some money. Number 20, so I chose the $20 bill, and I forgot what I crossed out and put 20 land over. It's been like that for a few years, so I don't remember exactly, but.
So this is not a new thing. You've had that out there before.
Yeah, it's been there for a
yeah.
while.
Yeah. So one question about your arrival at training camp this year in the Brinks truck.
Mm-hmm.
I need you to sort of tell me what was the thought process behind that, and how did you think of it? Did someone else think of it? And tell me the story.
I knew I wanted to do something, and I had thought maybe of the Brinks truck idea a little while back. But Adidas came to me, and Uninterrupted came to me, and they gave me two options kind of some things I could do to come into training camp. And one was, option number one was the Brinks truck with a influencer out here of my choice. The second option was kind of like Wolf of Wall Street, like very business-like, come up like in a black car and a suit and stuff. And of course I picked the Brinks truck idea. I thought it would be more fitting and funnier. So I picked that idea, and then they asked me the influencer I wanted to use. I told them Ha Ha Davis, who's a comedian. And yeah, we kind of all collabed and went from there.
What is it now that it really seems like guys are kind of having fun by how they get to training camp? Antonio Brown in the hot air balloon, you in the Brinks truck.
Yeah,
Antonio Brown, that was a pretty good one.
I agree.
So is it a little bit of a competition? Do you guys want to have somebody say, now that was the best trip to training camp?
I don't think it's really a competition. I think everybody does it in good fun, and I just kind of enjoy doing it. But
did you know Antonio Brown was going to do that?
I did not. No.
What did you think when you saw it?
I thought it was dope. I thought it was cool. Very creative.
Yeah.
I liked it.
I want to ask you a little bit about the position of cornerback and the scrutiny of the position of cornerback now, especially in the wake of the NFC Championship game, when a call that should have been made against Nickell Robey Coleman in the NFC Championship game was missed. And the NFL has now reacted to it by basically saying, we're going to allow pass interference to be replay reviewable now.
Yeah.
Give me your opinion of that now being able to be reviewed.
Well, if I understand the rules correctly, a coach can challenge it.
Correct. Whether it's called on the field or whether it's not called, he can challenge.
Whether it's called or not, a coach can challenge it. But, I mean, unless it's a crucial play or critical play, I don't see coaches just challenging it. You know, pass interferences all the time. Plus, you only get, what, two challenges anyway?
Yeah, right.
I don't see them just throwing out challenge flags all the time for pass interference, unless it's in a crucial moment of the game, in which, in that case, I agree, it should be, everything should be under a microscope. So something like what happened in the NFC Championship game could get reviewed. So, yeah, I think it's not bad, but as well, like, human error with the refs and stuff, that's a real thing, and I think that's why the refs get paid, and we kind of have to trust that at the same time. So I don't really know. I'm indifferent about how I feel about it.
Do you worry at all, and has there been any talk that, you know, sort of the jousting that you do with wide receivers anyway might get called, even though that is pretty natural on almost every, you know, time you're in coverage?
Yeah. Like I said, it's very natural. Receivers probably want flags every play, and we want flags on them every play as well, like offensive pass interference and defensive pass interference, respectively. But like I said, coaches have to be very smart and strategic on how they use their challenges. And other than that, if it's a touchdown, it's automatically reviewed. So I don't think that it's going to make a huge difference besides crucial moments of the game.
I've always thought that one of the best wide receivers I've ever seen at hiding offensive pass interference was Michael Irvin. And he knew exactly when he could do something, and he knew when all eyes were on him. And I wonder, how much of your play do you have to really think, even crew to crew, okay, how much can I get away with this crew? How much grabbing are they going to allow? How much is too much? Mm-hmm. How much is that a part of the cornerback wide receiver play right now?
I think it's a crucial part. Me, personally, I try to play pretty consistent every game with how I do and the amount of physicalness and tugging I do and just my whole all-around game. But I definitely have learned some crews, some referee crews, better than others, so I know if they're going to let us be a little bit more physical.
Do you study back judges and side judges and those guys at all, or not really?
Not study them. I wouldn't say study them.
Yeah.
I get a little familiar with them, though.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't say study them.
Is there an understanding right now, like when you were growing up in this game, were there corners who you watched and you to see, okay, how much can I get away with and what is going too far? Who would you say you learned a lot from?
Yeah, I used to watch corners, of course, like Champ Bailey, of course. I used to watch highlights of Clemson Deion all the time, Pat Pete, Revis. I mean, I could probably keep going. Cromartie. There's a lot of guys who I used to watch growing up, but I never watched it in the aspect of, oh, what can I get away with? I watched it more so as like, how can I play the game the right way as best as I can and not have to feel like I have to get over and tell
right.
me to do this type of stuff. Yeah, definitely going to take my opportunities when I get a chance to get a little edge. But other than that, I want to play the game the right way, play the game fair, and, you know, beat guys just strictly off of skill and talent.
How much conversation happens between officials and you and defensive backs during a game?
Not too much. I mean,
maybe at the start of the game a little bit?
Possibly. It depends. Yeah. If I know I'm playing a receiver who's, you know, pushes off a lot, I might just tell the ref to watch for it or something. But they do that. Receivers do that almost every game, too. Like, go up to refs and tell them, hey, this guy holds you, this guy does this, this guy does that. So It's really up to the refs. They have to call the game consistently.
What was your feeling the other day when you saw that Mike Thomas signed for $20 million a year, richest receiver in the history of the game?
Well, I was happy for him. Me and Mike have the same agent, so I knew the deal before it, you know, hit mainstream. But so I was extremely happy for him, and he's well deserving of it.
Do you think right now you're the best cornerback in football?
I know I am.
You're sure?
100%.
Will you get paid like that?
Yeah, I will.
Do you think you'll play your whole career in Jacksonville?
Maybe.
Last question for you. So this game, it enters its 100th year this year. And now, as you're going to start the next century as one of the big players in the NFL, what does that mean to you for a sport that's as big in this country right now to know that as the game goes into its next century, all eyes on you?
I wouldn't really say all eyes on me. I mean, I do well for myself. I play at an elite level, but football is different than like a bunch of other sports, like basketball. There's like they can be a superstar on a team who can kind of take over a game in general. Playing corner, I can, you know, take over a side of the field at times, but I can't take over a complete game. Like I'm not playing offense. I have to rely on our offensive guys, Nick, and leading all the guys, Leonard out there, and everybody else we have out there. And I also have to rely on like my safeties, the linebackers, D-line to get pressure. I can't cover for 10 seconds, you know, no matter how good, you know, I may be or may think I am, I can't cover for 10 seconds. So it, like, football is legit a whole team sport, like 11-11. So, yeah, it's important, and I take a lot of pride in doing my job very well at the most elite level that I can do it at, but I got to rely on my guys, too.
Jalen Ramsey, have a great year.
Thank you.
And now, 5 minutes with a writer. She's a veteran scribe who's covered the Cleveland Browns, it sounds ridiculous, for most of her adult life, Mary Kay Cabot of the Cleveland Plain Dealer. So we're here on the sidelines of Cleveland Browns camp. Happy to be joined by Mary Kay Cabot, a veteran beat writer who's covered this team for quite a while. How many years, Mary Kay?
I think maybe close to 30 now.
Wow.
With
that's
a little
lot of
break
years.
In between.
Yeah.
3-year break.
Was that a sanity break?
Well, that was, you know, when they were out of town for those 3 years. But I always say I wasn't productive during those years, but I was reproductive. I had my kids during those years.
That's actually good. How many kids do you have?
I have 3.
Wow.
So, yeah. The mom beat writer.
How is it to have kids and to be a beat writer and have the phone ring at all times of the day or night? You're nursing your baby and you're on the phone with whoever.
It's been insane. I should have been a reality show.
Yeah.
I really should have. Yeah, the kids did a great job raising themselves. But
yeah, that's good. So, Mary Kay, here we are. You were on the sidelines of almost like America's team right now. Everybody is so curious about the Browns. How is the chemistry experiment going here?
Well, I think it's going really well so far, but the thing that I think that still has to happen, I really do believe that Baker and Odell really still need to get that magic. I think they need to get that chemistry where they can play fast and it looks really, really natural. Now, you know, Odell, you know, missed some of the offseason, and he did so with the blessing of Freddie Kitchens. But there is, and I've talked to Peyton Manning about this, there is nothing like reps together.
Right.
You can't replace
that. There's no replacing that.
There's no replacing that. And so I think they still need to find that. I mean, this is a whole new offense for Odell. And not only that, he was with Eli Manning for 5 solid years.
Yeah.
It's like being married. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, you know each other's nuances. You finish each other's sentences. And even though it didn't end that great, you know, you still know each other's nuances. So I still think that they need to find the magic with each other. And they will. It's coming. I mean, they're both so darn talented.
Tell me how his team has accepted him and how has the community accepted Odell Beckham?
Oh, he's a superstar here. I mean, he is, you know, it's no longer LBJ, but it's OBJ here. You know, Cleveland has replaced LBJ with OBJ. So that's basically it. He's a superstar here of that magnitude. every single move he makes is chronicled, you know, blown up, you know, everything that he does out here, whether he's dancing, whether he's, you know, hanging out with Jarvis. I mean, we are all over it, and people are eating it up.
Have you ever thought, this is the thought that occurred to me, that he got so famous so early because of that incredible catch with the Giants. How can any person, especially a young person who doesn't have a lot of world experience yet, how can somebody handle that? And I wonder, how do you think he has handled that since coming here, being the focal point that everybody looks at?
I think he's handling it really, really well. There's no question that he had to wrap his brain around this trade. He struggled with it. He grappled with it. It was very difficult for him to realize, oh my gosh, be careful for what you wish for. I'm now leaving New York City to go to Cleveland.
Yeah.
Okay? I mean, the social life is a little different here.
Yeah.
So I think in that regard, it's been a process for him, but I think he's really starting to embrace it. Now you see him out here. He's dancing. He's having a good time. He's relaxed. The media scrutiny, although it's large here in Cleveland, it's not New York either.
Right.
So I think maybe he's a little tiny bit less in the fishbowl than he was. But he's having fun with his teammates. He's getting to know people. Freddie's giving him an opportunity to be himself and to just get used to this whole idea.
Finishing up 5 minutes with Mary Kay Cabot. So, Mary Kay, what are the issues now that this team has to solve, address, fix before the start of the season to be a contender to win the AFC North?
You know, I think they just have to bring it all together. They have new players from all over the place, and they have a new coaching staff. They have a new offensive coordinator in Todd Monken. Freddie Kitchens is a new head coach for the very first time. He's only been a coordinator for 8 games of his entire NFL career. He's got a new defensive coordinator. They're trying to blend all kinds of thoughts on the offense. So that's what I think it is. I think it's just bringing it all together so that they can put it out on the field, and they don't have time. They don't have a lot of margin for error. They're on primetime 3 times in the first 5 weeks. They have to start fast.
Wow. Last thing I would ask you is, so over the years, you obviously have great perspective. You've seen a lot of losing teams. And I wonder, everybody in Cleveland is so excited. Obviously, this feels different. Do you think it will be different?
You know what? There's so much talent out there that I actually think it will be different. I do think it will be different. Because even though the coaching staff is new and they're from all different walks of football life, there are some really great coaches. There's some great minds, some great experience. So I do think it will be different. And I think that, you know, we saw glimpses of that in the last 8 games last year. Now, they didn't play the greatest defenses in the world last year, and they will face better competition this year. But I think it's going to be different. I think they're going to win games, and I think it's warranted.
Mary Kay Cabot, Cleveland Plain Dealer, thank you so much for joining me and educating my listeners about really the most intriguing team in the NFL this year.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
So that's it for this week's podcast. I really appreciate you joining me. Thank you to Darius Leonard, Jalen Ramsey, and Mary Kay Cabot. We're very, very lucky to have them. And also, please, 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 if you have a fantasy draft coming up, go get the Roto-World Draft Guide. And the reason why you need to get the Roto-World Draft Guide is this is not the run-of-the-mill draft guide with saying, okay, here's who we think you should draft. This is packed with insider information and the kind of things you need to know to decide, okay, am I going all in on, let's say for the sake of argument, am I going all in on Le'Veon Bell this year? Or am I going to take a chance with one of the newer running backs in football? Am I going to take a chance, you know, with, and obviously taking a chance, nobody's taking a chance with Saquon Barkley. He's going to be a very high pick in everybody's draft. But do you trust Darius Geis, you know, of Washington? Do you think Mark Ingram is going to have enough to be a high draft choice in Baltimore? These are the kind of questions that you will get some real inside information and just some insight into why you should pick who you should pick on your draft day. So, that's it for the Peter King podcast this week. It's been a pleasure. Join me again next week for another edition of the Peter King podcast from the training camp trail. I'll join you from way out west next week.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.